she convinced me, hey, everything that you did before you did this injury, you're going to be able to do again. You just have to do this physical therapy to the best of your ability. And I did. And I dropped pounds and I was like, so then I started playing again. And at 32 years old, playing in a basketball game outside on the blacktop, I ruptured the same patella tendon again, doing the exact same thing I was trying to do the first time. And while I was sitting on the ground with Derrick Brooks, Hall of Famer Derrick Brooks from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, yes, I'm name dropping, he was holding my knee together in Tampa, Florida. I said, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to announce my retirement from basketball. And welcome to Offensive Thoughts. I am Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LeJour from Bridgeton Academy. Coach, how are you doing?
Doing great. Good evening.
Good evening. And a great evening it is. I think it's interesting. We hear all of these things about these new virus strains, and you know, I don't really know much about it, but all I can tell you is that I am super vaccinated. I have been vaccinated many a times. What's your thought process on this new, what is it? What do you call it?
Omicron.
Omicron. There we go. I like it.
Right, originating in South Africa apparently, and you know, President Biden going on TV today urging people, you know, concern but not panic. So, yeah, I mean, I would say that's where I'm at, concern but not panic. My assistant coach, Paris Horn, when this all started about 2.5 years ago, said this was the new normal. And we sat right here at this counter I'm at, and I told him he was out of his mind and crazy. And every few months it goes by, he's looking less and less crazy. And of course, I'm the one holding the bag. So anyway, sounds to me like we're all going to be fine if we're vaccinated, and certainly with booster. But it may, you know, just tell us that we'll be getting COVID shots like the flu shot from here on out, simply because it continues to mutate. That's about as scientific as I can get.
Yeah, I think for us as coaches, I think it comes back to this idea of how does it affect our players, especially because COVID has been an attack on the lungs and lung capacity. I think it's been a really big concern of mine when COVID first came about. I was really careful to kind of hunker down and make sure that I wasn't putting anybody that I was in direct contact with at undue harm, because I was being reckless with my life. And now, like you say, and as Coach Horn so eloquently put it, if this is our new normal, our defense mechanism for it has to be to be better fit, has to be to just continue to do whatever we can to be as healthy as possible so that we can fight whatever it is we are probably predestined to get at some point, and then figure out exactly to what level we get it. So
yeah,
I think for me, I'm resigned to the fact that I've done everything that I can to be as healthy and to be as conscious as I can about this thing, so that I can, you know, be as or you know, maybe like what is it when you
immune?
Not immune, but just I want to be able to be ahead of it. And I think that a lot of that, which is really why I think we haven't seen a lot of fight from coaches, because they kind of get when something hits, you've got to figure out the way to get around it or the way to work through it. And I think that's what we've seen a lot of coaches be able to take this and teams be able to take this a lot better than maybe some of the general public has.
Yeah, and I think what coaches are in the business of doing and is controlling what you can control, and certainly trying to get players to do the same thing, control the controllables. The rest of it is kind of out of your hands. And there's clearly some things with this that we all control, whether it's healthy habits or, you know, maybe being smart about the crowds we're in and some of that stuff. So control what you can control, but the rest of it, leave it to science, in my humble opinion.
Absolutely. And trust science. I don't think we get to unilaterally decide when we trust science. That's the part I don't particularly get. We're going to trust science on this, but then on this other stuff, we're not going to trust science. Like, no, let's just trust science, because this is what they do for a living. And we coach sports, you know, and teach English and teach history or civics or whatever it is that you're teaching these days. It's interesting because you're in a unique position. One of the good things about Brisson Academy is that you're kind of isolated, and you can cocoon yourselves almost from a lot of the stuff that you deal with. Although people are coming back from Thanksgiving,
yeah, they are now. I'm not sure if we were calling ourselves a bubble first or whether the NBA had coined that phrase, but. Because I think BA has been calling itself a bubble for a long time. And, normally going down to Dunkin' Donuts down the road is getting out of the bubble. But in this particular case, we were trying to stay in the bubble. So,
yeah.
Students were incredible a year ago. They couldn't go home. You know, they couldn't get off campus for a year. So remarkable year in that respect. And then this year, it's more about what you're saying, being smart about travel and the company you're keeping and the types of places you're going, particularly as numbers are spiking again.
So the import-export business at Bridgeton Academy was non-existent over the last year and a half. That's what I'm hearing.
I think so. If I'm inferring what you're saying properly, I would say yes to that.
Yes. And ladies and gentlemen, take you behind the curtain a little bit, like not too far behind the curtain, but you know, being at Bridgeton Academy and being a single adult guy at Bridgeton Academy, there is not much in the way of meeting people in North Bridgeton, Maine. And so a lot of times you have to go and travel places, or you have to have people come visit you, which is what we've coined as the import-export business of Bridgeton Academy. However, when you're dealing with a pandemic, you can't be bringing people in or exporting yourself. So that's been something I'm sure that a lot of not just the kids, I'm talking about the adults on campus that have had to really adjust what they do in order to make sure they're keeping people healthy.
Well, socially secure people are probably thrive at Bridgeton Academy. So people that are able to, you know, keep themselves company and not need too many things. In fact, secure people in general probably are folks that maybe do best in a place like this. But
absolutely. But I think that the community itself is social. I think that's what helps it. The community, and it's probably like this because I've been at a couple places that are boarding schools. But not quite the same as Bridgeton Academy. And usually those types of places have a lot of people within the infrastructure who are social. And so it becomes I can remember from my time there, a lot of what I did was just hanging out with other people that were already there. So it made it a lot easier to insulate oneself from the outside world, because you had people who were a lot more social, a lot more willing to be that type of, or not willing, but just naturally that type of person, where they were willing to host things and, you know, we all hung out.
Well, I think it's as much a way of life as it is a occupation. And then, the personal and the professional blend in for sure. So if you want your lives totally separate, then any type of boarding school is probably not the right place to be. Hey, how about Mac Jones?
I mean, how about Mac Jones? If you want, do you want to extol his greatness, or do you want to talk about the greatness of the people who brought him in and put him in positions to be successful? Which way are you trying to go with this?
Well, I my personal opinion, there's credit on both sides. They're not mutually exclusive. So a little bit like, of course, the Brady Belichick debate, which is great. Is great sports talk. I would say similarly, Mac Jones and the New England Patriots are a great fit. He clearly with the intangible and tangible skills to quickly adapt to the pro game, and they with the astute pick in the first place and then development quickly of a of a first round pick who's right now playing at a higher level than the guys drafted ahead of him. So credit on both sides.
Yeah, I and I'm with you. My only argument would be I think any of those guys would do what he's doing in that system.
Yeah, and that may be right. I doubt that very much. I don't think he's the only one that would have. I wouldn't go that far, but I think that does diminish a little bit from just how well he's doing. Like when someone goes out and throws at the completion rate that he's doing, and I just wouldn't accept the fact that any one of the guys would go out and do that. I think there's something in him that's allowed him to do that. But anyway,
No, I'm with it because I'm willing to have this debate with you because I think this is the part that gets undersold about coaching, because in my opinion, Mac Jones, who is probably the oldest of all of those guys that came out, he's the only one who I believe spent his entire, collegiate career there. So he is the more mature of all four of those, or five, excuse me, of those first round picks. But then I also look at the fact that he came to a team that is not asking him to put it on his shoulders. They're asking him to work within the confines and the structure of the program. I think this is why they felt okay with getting rid of Cam Newton, because it's essentially them asking him to do what they were asking Cam Newton to do outside of running. And now when they want to do that, they just put a running back in at quarterback and let him do the Cam Newton stuff that they were having Cam do. And so when we see the success that Cam Newton had early on before COVID, like, It's easy to see why Mac Jones is having that success. He is not an awful quarterback. He's a quality quarterback who went to arguably the most stable system that a first round quarterback could go to, and all the rest of these quarterbacks went to some of the most unstable situations you can possibly think of.
I think it discredits him a little bit to say that, you simply plug him into a system and, there he goes. Because, again, I think you're plugging all those quarterbacks into systems that are designed to win football games. So and Cam Newton didn't have the same team. So it's not – I wouldn't compare – this version of the New England Patriots to the one that Cam Newton was trying to quarterback anyway. And I think the organization was honest about that. They were in a rebuild, and both on both sides of the ball, they're a different football team. So let's make no mistake about that. This isn't a Mac versus Cam.
No, right. Not at all. I'm with you there. I'm saying in what they were asking of Cam, like they weren't asking right. Cam to drive the ball down the field. They're not asking Mac Jones to drive the ball down the field. They're asking
I think the difference.
No, go ahead.
I think the difference is that Mac can throw the ball 8 yards and hit the receiver in the hands, or 12 yards and be spot on. So it looked like, you know, Cam either needed a little bit more time, or, you know, or his throwing motion or whatever. Some, they're different quarterbacks, but didn't have the same precision, at least to this untrained eye.
Well, no, I mean, you can – Cam Newton's never been a an 80% completion percentage kind of guy.
Right.
That's not his gift. But I think that with New England last year, and I'm talking pre-COVID Cam, like, he was doing work. He was he had them in position to get to a playoffs, and then COVID hit, and then post-COVID Cam was clearly not the same Cam as pre-COVID Cam. But I think what I'm saying is that because what they were asking him to do is the same thing that they're asking Matt Jones to do, but they've added more weapons. They've solidified some positions that were not solidified outside of running back, which seems to be just we can throw whoever we want in at running back. They're not asking him to drive the ball 40, 50 yards down the field in order to make plays. And then when you look at the situations in Jacksonville, which essentially is college football coach coming to the NFL, trying to figure it out, making some bad decisions, and it's the Jaguars. Chicago Bears, coach who doesn't know his future, trying to win games to keep his job, doesn't necessarily want to develop the same way. Was this his decision? Was this front office decision? And then the Jets, where I actually think may have reached on a guy who was not really the guy, who got glossed up more than what he probably should have gotten glossed up. He was my lowest ranked guy out of all of the quarterbacks, Zach Wilson. And then San Francisco, who took a project that they never intended to play this year. So, like when you look at the situation that Matt Jones comes into, it's undeniable. He comes into the most stable situation of all of those quarterbacks. And I don't want to take anything away from Matt, because he's performed to the level that they want him to perform, and maybe even exceeded expectations a little bit to this point. I don't want to take anything away from him just because I don't think his upside is the same as maybe some of those other guys' upside, but his upside doesn't have to be the same as those other guys.
Who was it many years ago now, top ranked quarterback, that just made it clear that he wouldn't be drafted by a certain team? Do you recall? Hall of Famer. He said, "I won't." Well,
there's been a few.
I'm having.
Talking about Elway?
I thought it was Elway. Yeah,
it was Elway. Elway said, "I'm not going to such and such." Eli Manning said, "I'm not going to San Diego."
Right.
So
you just make it.
He's going to be a Hall of Famer, even though he probably should not be a Hall of Famer. But when you win two Super Bowls, that, you know,
you beat
the greatest dynasty in the history of the NFL, you're probably going to go to the Hall of Fame, even though you shouldn't. That's something for another day. But I've really been impressed by the poise of Matt Jones when what he's been able to do. I still think he's a little skittish when they were able to get some bodies around him, but you don't have to worry about that when a lot of what you're doing is catch, step, throw.
And I think most quarterbacks are a little skittish when you put pressure on them. So
there are some that are skittish, and then there are a lot that are skittish, and then there are some that will like cut your heart out.
Right.
Like you blitz a guy like let's say like a Lamar Jackson. You blitz a Lamar Jackson, you better get to him, or else that's something that's probably going to end up in a touchdown on an extremely large gain. You can't really blitz Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning knows what you're doing before you do it, and he just drops it off to whomever the open guy is. I think very similar to Tom Brady in that respect. They've seen everything so much that you kind of can't fool them. You just got to hope to get lucky in those situation.
Yeah, but every once in a while, right? That's how the Giants beat Brady. They moved him off his mark, right? And so if you can move them off their mark, and then the way, again, that you blitz Brady and Manning is going to be different than the way you blitz a Lamar, because you can't let him outside your contain, but you can still move him around maybe and move him off his mark and then make him.
Hold on. Are we saying that's the way that the Giants beat Tom Brady? Are we saying that the Giants beat Tom Brady because a guy caught a football on his head? I mean, yeah. There was a – yeah, they – yeah, they,
factors.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just – you know.
There's always – right?
I was around in those times. I know how you guys took that. You guys
that was hard.
Those. Yeah, those are hard Super Bowls. I remember like people, young men ringing the victory bell on Patriots wins, which I always think was just some of the best times, by the way. Just guys like going up to ring the victory bell. It's interesting to see. I want to know what happens, because the Patriots they're heading towards a playoff berth, and you want to get the legend of Mac Jones off the ground really quickly. How far does he take them in the playoffs? Like, that's the thing. Like, that's the Brady magic, right? That's the Brady magic. He got his opportunity early, and then he took him to ship like that. And then the rest was history.
So I think the magic this year is make the playoffs. And obviously people around here are already upping the expectations and what will make a successful year. But I think they make the playoffs, and, you know, people ought to be awfully happy about that. And now you win a game in the playoffs. Now that's pretty dang significant.
That's the talk of a coach. I feel like that's the talk of a coach right there.
I tend to talk that way.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you, because I'm with you. I think any success is playoffs, and then anything else is gravy. But that's not how the typical fan reacts when it comes to these things. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because with success comes expectation, and with expectation comes pressure. And we've never seen Mac Jones have to deal with pressure. He only had one season at Alabama. That was his magical season. So he never had to come back and do it again and have the pressure of, you need to do this again. There were no expectations for him coming into this season with New England. So going forward now, they're expecting him to be Tom Brady.
Well, he just performed against the Titans, albeit they were minus a couple guys, but he beat the Titans in a big game, and so there was pressure under snowy, cold conditions. So there was pressure with the elements, and now they go to Buffalo for a Monday night game, and so there'll be a lot of hype around this one, and we'll have to. See what happens.
Speaking of pressure,
Thanksgiving
is a big line of demarcation. I have a rule. My rule is no Christmas before Thanksgiving. However, I know there are some people who are putting up Christmas lights and doing those things before Thanksgiving. So I'm trying to understand, like, to Christmas or not to Christmas before Thanksgiving, how do you make the determination on whether or not that's how you want to roll?
Well, you know, I used to be a traditionalist, probably, and let one holiday, you know, have its own day before I worried about the next. But as I got older, I really grew into the idea that it's a holiday season. And so it's the rumors that have proven to be true, that there are lights outside my house that went up in the days preceding Thanksgiving, aren't so much Christmas lights as they are holiday seasonal festive lights, of which, you know, I'm happy to have been the first in my neighborhood to put out there. So, and you know, have seen a few people now carry suit, maybe a little quicker than they would have. But, you know, again, in these times, I think a little cheer, a little brightness in our lives is not a bad thing. And I wasn't going to let tradition stop me from doing what was inside of me. And the only other explanation I'll offer you is that, you know, my mother, who has recently, in the past couple of years, moved to Maine, been a little closer to us and whatnot,
okay.
Oftentimes very dismayed at the folks that would leave their wreaths up months after the year, or their lights would, you know, somehow she had the official Christmas, this is the number of days that all decorations are allowed, which I never, frankly, quite understood, but she seemed to. So I think in some respects I might be defying my mother.
I like it. So we're having this session right now because I feel as if there are clear lines. It's the day after Thanksgiving to New Year's Day. But I think what you're talking about is the idea of these are not Christmas lights. These are holiday lights.
That is correct.
So within this is the holidays, then we can celebrate that whenever we begin to celebrate the holiday.
And, exactly. And
so then my question is that the same for everything? Does that mean that Christmas music is no, or holiday music is no holds barred the moment you start getting ready for Thanksgiving, or do you reserve holiday music for after Thanksgiving?
I do tend to reserve my music for after Thanksgiving, although I will tell you I heard just one or two on the radio before and made note of it, but I'm not gonna play a steady dose of it until, you know, closer, probably 2 weeks before the actual Christmas. But that's because the nature of the music for me, and I'm not an aficionado, but I just don't think the chords are that complex. So I think the music is kind of pretty simple, like a pop tune, most of it. And so you can easily get bored by listening to the same poorly done pop tune or ordinary Christmas music, although there's certain holiday music that clearly you could listen to forever.
I like to take this time to welcome Mariah Carey back.
Amen.
It's always good to see the Queen back and all of the Mariah Carey butterflies that are out there. It's happy. Like, I would love to know how much money Mariah Carey makes off this one song that she wrote in 20 minutes. That is, well, that's the story. She wrote it in 20 minutes, said, hey, we need a Christmas song. She was like, oh, okay. Boom, 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 boom. Here's a song. And now the residuals off this song is so ridiculous that we celebrate her return to the world every time Christmas starts. For me, you know, I'm a karaoke guy. If anybody doesn't know, I'm a karaoke guy. I love to sing karaoke music. It is no Christmas songs until after Thanksgiving. But I get Christmas all the way up until until New Year's Eve. So I can sing holiday songs until we hit the first. But once we hit the first, no more holiday songs.
Yeah, and it begs the question, you already hit at it a little bit, but, you know, when's the tree coming down? When are the lights coming down? I know my wife comes from a family that, you know, I'm not sure, maybe 6 in the morning on the 26th, there's a lot of stuff coming down. That's actually not true. But, you know, there's people that take that stuff down very quickly. I'll tend to leave it up a bit, you know, and then, you know, realize I have to move on. So
I think the people who take it down quickly are people who are always changing out to the new thing. Like, yeah. I feel like the people who take down the Christmas decorations quickly is because they have some type of New Year decor that they want to, you know, put up to bring in the New Year with. I have no research to back that up, by the way.
Do you do your best resolutions around the New Year?
No, I never make a resolution around a New Year. And it's only out of defiance of resolutions around the New Year. Like, I don't think that that's genuine. I think that you should make a resolution whenever you feel I need to change some stuff. So for me, like for instance, I said I need to be more physically fit. I didn't wait until the New Year to make that. I was working up to it last year. I had been doing a lot more of walking and running, but my knees are janky. So I was like, this isn't going to work. And then in June, I said, I've got to find some different things. And so in July, I started a Cycle Bar membership, and Cycle Bar is not paying us, but if Cycle Bar would like to pay us, we would love to promote Cycle Bar. I started a Cycle Bar membership, and I pay for an unlimited membership so that I can go as much as I can, because I know that the part of me will try to make it as cheap as possible to go to this Cycle Bar class, which means I'm there as much as I possibly can. I started my Cycle Bar class started regular Cycle Bar classes in mid-July. I am already heading towards my 100th ride.
Yeah, so, it sounds a lot like my golf membership, you know.
Well, yeah,
I have my golf membership, and man, I just go and go and go and go, and I drive the price of that thing just down and down and down. Yeah, as far as I can go.
So, by the way, how is that coming? You know, there's always that tournament that you're looking to win every year. How have you been doing?
Well, I mean, I have not won our local club championship. I did finish third this year, and on the sixth hole of day two, because it's a 36-day tournament, on the sixth hole of day two, I was in the lead after being two under on the front nine, and obviously some things happened to me that we won't get into at that point that cost me holding that lead and seeing what I could have done down the stretch, but I'm hopeful, and then we'll become resolute in the next few months. Despite the cold weather here, I will begin my indoor preparation.
You know, and there's always the opportunity to come south and do a little southern preparation as well once the season is over where you are.
And I try to do that a little bit with a vacation. And then, you know, what keeps me from coming south permanently is the idea that there's a lot of, you know, 62-year-old dudes who think they're like decent golfers, and I don't need to go try to. Yeah, that's kind of what I am. 62-year-old dude who's a decent golfer. So I can be that guy here and still have an occupation that I enjoy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just
no time. The PGA Tour doesn't have to be afraid of me.
Yeah, just throwing it out there.
Me and Tiger, because Tiger says he's not going to win anymore. So
Tiger, but Tiger's not 62, and Tiger was in a car crash that almost killed him. So,
well, he was. Think
that's probably why Tiger is saying he's not going to win anymore.
He feels like he's 62 with the back surgeries.
I'm 100% sure if Tiger had not mangled his leg in a car accident, he would still feel as if he had a chance to win.
I think so too.
Yeah, especially because he did. I mean, that's the crazy part about it. Like, people said he was done, and then he went out and won it again. Yeah. And I'm mentioning that because, as you know, I've lived in a lot of places with really great golf. And I happen to live in a place with really great golf still. So, you know.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do a live session.
Savannah beckons.
We'll do a live session of offensive thought. And by the way, you know, it was my son who you know, actually asked his mom, like, offensive thoughts, huh? Like, I didn't hear him discuss one thing about offense. And, you know, yeah, we chuckled at that pretty good. And he was kind of missing the double entendre or whatever it is we're trying to do with that, you know, knowing the offensive, that we were both kind of offensive guys. We're both, you know, putting our thoughts out there for better or worse.
Yeah, and
good best defense is a good offense.
Yep, and but. It's interesting because I tend in football, I'm definitely an offensive guy. In basketball, I'm really more of a defensive guy. Mm-hmm. Even though I like an up-tempo offense, I like to push it. I like to, you know, I want to push the pace, but really all of that's driven by defense. As a player, I was definitely the guy who, hey, Gene, you've got this guy. Hey, Gene, this is the guy that's today. You've got that guy. And I was like, yeah, just make sure I've got that, you know, that double per diem. I appreciate you, coach. Hey, I'm not even going to say the school, but coach, I appreciate you. You held me down on those weekends when I was trying to go out and hang out. I appreciate you. And now that's not a thing anymore because players have ways to make their own money now. It's not paying players, but it's still better than what it was. Speaking of that, how are things going with you? I know you guys had the break, but now you're back in.
Well, we're back. We're back a couple of days now. You know, it's a good break. Anytime in prep school, you have some success right before you go home for basically a week. It's like, so, well, Division III doesn't get, you know, a week off, but they get several days off maybe that the higher levels don't get. So we take a break and we're back and guys get kind of readjusted and acquainted and maybe get on the legs a little bit for a couple of days. So, but we're back at it in practice and then we'll play this weekend. So we'll see, but they look good and practicing hard and no damage over the break. So.
And that's good. I was wondering because, and the reason I asked it because I've been a big proponent that I think that sometimes holiday tournaments can be overrated.
Hmm.
I think that, and this is coming from a guy who's been a lot of holiday tournaments, but I feel like they can be overrated in the sense that it can give you a false sense of who you can be, or it could demoralize you and send you down a road that you have to spend another like month and a half trying to recover from. I've always found that holiday tournaments are good if you can take winning and losing away from the tournament, but that's almost impossible when you're talking about like competitive people. What do you think about holiday tournaments? How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, I think number one, you know, you never stay the same. So you're always either getting better or worse, right? Cliche as it sounds, you're getting better or worse. So anytime you play, you know, you basically are, you know, you're accepting a challenge and getting better or somehow or another going down the other rabbit hole where for some reason or another, maybe you get worse. In prep school, you know, funny, again, it's not the holiday tournament, but it's the holiday break. And at different years, there are years when a team benefits from getting away from it a little bit. In fact, I heard Division I coaches this past year say that without the summer, two summers ago, they felt their players were fresher and made, you know, everyone was just a little more into it, let's just say, charged up. Because they hadn't just done it month after month after month the way they can at the highest level. So in prep school, again, you can get a break and see that break be very good for your team. And then you can take breaks and ultimately in looking back, say, you know what, that break wasn't very good. I think holiday tournaments are the same is my point. Okay, it plays out a little differently because you actually have games where all I'm talking about is time away. I think it is how you frame it, just like you're saying. You know, they're about money at the Division I level. So I think there are teams, right, and just look on TV, and there's almost nobody at these games, but TV's paying the bill. So, you know, the guys are basically playing in games with about as many people as I get to go to ours, probably less, right? I think that when they have some marquee matchups, they're good. I think for some of the teams that get a chance to play, teams that they ordinarily couldn't, like good competition in advance, I think it's a prequel, right? It's to the NCAA tournament. I think they approach them the same way. Like, here's an opportunity to win a tournament, which if we're lucky, we want to be in a position at the end of the year to win our conference tournament or earn a bid to the NCAA tournament, etc. So I think it's all about how you frame it. But there's no doubt there seem to be some tournaments that in football and basketball that probably the you know, the public and maybe even the people involved would just as soon not see happen. I'm not sure. Again, I think money's driving the bus with some of this because, as you know, football and basketball are paying a good deal of the bills at the, you know, in the athletic department and beyond. I wouldn't go quite as far as maybe you saying that they're of no value. I think they can be, but I think it probably depends on who you are and what the tournament is and probably what your mindset is both going in and coming out of it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, and I don't really say things just to be like controversial, but I mean, it's really offensive thoughts. So,
right,
I mean,
right.
At some point, someone's not going to agree with me. No. I'm okay with it. Right. For me, I know as a player, when I was in high school, I loved holiday tournaments. But I came from dirt. So it's like any chance that I got to travel somewhere and stay in a hotel and get like free meals and kind of be able to, you know, do whatever, that was a great thing. In college, it was awful. Like in college, those holiday tournaments, like I was like, I'm tired. I want to go home. I haven't seen people in a while. There's nobody on campus. The cafeteria is not even open. Like we have to figure out how we're going to feed ourselves. You know, like it's a different world. And so
right.
I think depending upon what level you're at, because for every like people have to remember that for every holiday tournament that you have in Las Vegas and Hawaii and Division I Bahamas and Florida, there's like a ton of Division II, Division III, NAIA tournaments that don't draw nearly the same eyes or bring in the same bank, but people think of them the same way. And I can remember going up to St. Joseph for a tournament in Maine. And I'm just like, why are we in Maine right now? we couldn't find a place to go that was not Maine for a basketball tournament during Christmas break when I'd rather be home. It was one of those things that I just looked at it. I was like, man, this is just not enjoyable. And I never walked away from a Thanksgiving or a Christmas tournament going, yo, we're going to win it all now. Like this tournament showed me what I needed to show. Now, as a spectator, I can admit watching Duke and Gonzaga play, it was fun. That was a great game. Duke came out on top. Gonzaga showed, hey, they're not invincible. What are people going to do? Is this going to be a year that Coach K can Coach K go out with a championship? And this game showed me it's possible. I didn't think he had a chance. But that game showed me it's possible. He could go out on top of the on top.
And I thought your most offensive comment really was the shot you took against the state of Maine. Maine loves basketball. Maine loves tournament basketball. Maine, I would say in the 25 years I've been here, is it's a smaller version of Indiana. Like, there's literally like backboards hanging on barns and, you know, kids dreaming of growing up to be the local hero that they, you know, saw when they were a kid, et cetera, et cetera. So that is why Maine has a strong allure to bring in basketball teams, and probably why somehow you didn't know it, but the forces of Maine hoops drew you to the area, because Maine is a great basketball state.
Absolutely. And 19-year-old me did not know that.
Right.
19-year-old me was not aware. Right. And it's interesting.
I'll tell you the other good thing, too. Sorry.
No.
Yeah. As a parent, selfishly now, holiday tournaments are great, because if you get to go, you know, if you get to go somewhere, and yes, it would help if the, you know, temperatures were 60 and above. But even if not, if you get to go somewhere and watch some basketball with, you know, a family member or something like that, then I can say tournament basketball is great. And as a player, you're right that they're not all created equal, these tournaments. But I would just say, as athletes, right, there's a tremendous amount of sacrifice and responsibility that's on you every, you know, the day you put on your uniform. And so that's basically the price of doing business.
Absolutely. I will say this. I did get my first in-game dunk at St. Joseph.
See?
So, well, in-game college dunk at St. Joseph. Caught somebody slipping on a break. They thought it was sweet. It was a good time. Caught my first body there. Many more to come after that. And it's interesting, because when you go from a player to, you know, when your regular playing days are over, one of the things that I found interesting is, it's almost, how do you know it's over? Like, how do you know it's over? Like, you know it's over, because there's no, like, no one's asking you to play on a team that matters, right? But you're still playing basketball. And for me, I play basketball the same way. It doesn't matter if I'm playing for my team or if I'm playing pickup basketball. I don't know how to differentiate. I play basketball the same way. So I never really, like, understood it was over in the same way that most people understood it was over. I was still out there competing. This was a competitive thing. And one thing that I realized is that as I continue to grow into my 20s and then into my 30s, I had to figure out when it was over for me. Like, I should probably not even be playing pickup. Was there a time in your life where you realized, like, hey, this is over for me? Because I know exactly what my day was.
Right. Well, I mean, my career is not over. Okay. I still play in the Bridgeton Academy 3-on-3 tournament, which I've won twice in my career. I played in the area some. And I tell my wife, I dunked the ball with our, you know, with our team when I was 40. In the season that I was 40 years old, I was still dunking the basketball, which, again, 6'4". Now, that's a true story. It's on video.
No, I'm not doubting you. I'm not doubting you. I'm just thinking about 40 for you and 40 for me. And it was, yeah, different 40.
Yeah. Okay. So then, you know, it's not over. I'm not going to give you that one. I probably won't give you that one. I play a lot less, and one of the reasons it's close to being over, but it's really not over, is that, you know, it hurts a lot. It's a hard game. And I like to play some other games, right? And I like to – I don't work out at our new sponsor,
Cycle Bar.
Yeah, I don't work out at Cycle Bar, but I'd be happy to if they would like to ship up a cycle up here. I'll ride it.
Yeah, if they open up a cycle bar there, that would be.
Well, or if they just send me a cycle and I'll put it in the background of this pod, I would ride it. But
you know, we would ride cycles while doing this podcast.
I would.
For it. Absolutely,
I would. So it hurts, and. You know, I'm not going to play in the summer because I may hurt myself, and now I will miss a few rounds of golf. I don't want to miss. I like to work out again, like you do. So, some of those things probably slow me down. From you know, the staff says, "Hey, Whit, we're playing on Tuesday and Thursday nights," and I'm I'll just pass.
Yeah,
and I know who's yeah. And I don't feel like limping on the sideline. Like, hey, Whit, what'd you do? Well, I, you know, went up and tried to block, you know, Billy chemistry teacher's shot and broke my leg.
Yeah,
I don't want to do that.
So for me, I know the exact day. I was out. So when I was 29, a couple weeks before I turned 30. I ruptured my patella tendon in my right knee. And that was the first. And for people who don't know, I was actually, I had actually been diagnosed with a partially torn patella when I was 23 years old. And at the time, the doctor told me, hey, there's no way for us to fix this. The only way to fix this is for it to completely tear. We don't recommend that. So you should probably stop doing whatever athletics. And I said, I'm 23 years old. You're crazy. We'll just ride these things until the wheel fall off and then figure it out. And so from 23 to 29 and 350 some odd days, I play basketball. And I play a physical brand of ball. I was trying to dunk on people. I was all the way up through 39. I actually blew it trying to dunk on somebody, and it exploded on me, and I'll never forget it because I had to drag myself out of an open gym at a church, which is really embarrassing. And then my brother drove me to the hospital where they said, hey, you know, this is what you did. You need to go here for surgery. But while I was at my recovery and when I was with my physical therapist, she convinced me, hey, everything that you did before you did this injury, you're going to be able to do again. You just have to do this physical therapy to the best of your ability. And I did. And I dropped pounds and I was like, so then I started playing again. And at 32 years old, playing in a basketball game outside on the blacktop, I ruptured the same patella tendon again, doing the exact same thing I was trying to do the first time. And while I was sitting on the ground with Derrick Brooks, Hall of Famer Derrick Brooks from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, yes, I'm name dropping, he was holding my knee together in Tampa, Florida. I said, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to announce my retirement from basketball at that point in time, because it occurred to me that this is what my life would be if I continued to play. It would just be injury after injury after injury. Now, I say that to say I haven't played real basketball at a prolonged period of time, but I have played basketball because I played with your son, Jackson, when you two came down and visited a few years ago now. It's been a good time, by the way. It's time for you to visit. It's been too long. But me and Jackson went out and we were playing ball. We were playing hard. And we went hard. So I haven't given up the game completely, but I consider myself to be retired because I'm no longer going to regularly play the game. So while I appreciate you and your 3-on-3 prowess, like, are you still playing regularly? Or do you still play?
Yeah, I'm not playing regularly.
Absolutely. So that's the thing. When was the time that you knew you probably should not be playing regularly?
Do you remember? No, old soldiers never die. They just fade away. So
fair enough.
As someone who played a physical brand, I think as people who played against me in my adult years would attest to, I think there wasn't a defining moment.
Yeah, I think as a guy who played with you, I like playing with you because you played a physical brand of basketball. And by the way, I like to tell people, when he talked about, you know, people drawing as many people as he draws at his games, it's different in the Wolver Dome. Like,
yeah.
You come through that thing, it's a different animal. I've heard other people talk about coming to play at Bridgeton Academy and how intimidating it is, even though there's only like 100 and some odd people in the gym. That's a different level of aggression. When you put all those dudes in the gym together to give them something to do. So
it's a great environment.
It is a fantastic environment. I hope that gym never changes. I hope, right. Well, I mean, too. I hope they continue to, like, you know, redo the floor and all that. But yeah, I hope they continue to have that same environment. But it's interesting because we always see our mortality and we see it in what we do, but we also see it in what other people do. I know that, you know, Hobart and Jackson, they've your son Jackson down at Hobart, they've had some successes and they've had some games they've let go. And I always think, and I want to get you out of here on this because we're almost coming up in time, but do you think people overreact to blowout wins and blowout losses?
I think you can. Yeah, I think you have to be careful. And again, it's always cliche, but coaches are going to urge everyone to kind of stay somewhere in the middle. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, any coach or player that said that they could completely do that, I don't think there's many folks built like that. I think there are, you know, some games hurt and some hurt more than others. And, you know, every win's a good win. I believe that. But you know what? Some are, you know, more good than another. I think a win can lead to another. I think some games are worth more than the one game. I think you can win one and catapult you. And I think you can lose one or two and, you know, go in the other direction too. So, but
do you think you can win a game and actually, because you won that game, lose some games?
I think you can. I think you see it all the time. I think right now at this point in the season, just in the college basketball season, there are teams, St. Bonaventure, a team that I think is really good, you know, won six in a row or something like that. And then, lost to a 3-3 Northern Iowa team. The Northern Iowa, I know, you know, great tradition and good basketball and all that, but on paper, you know, that doesn't stand to figure. And so I think that I think it happens at all ages because it happens in the pros too. I just think you got to be on your guard anytime you win. You have to be on your guard.
Yeah, and I think there's no bigger, like, example of that than UMass basketball, right? Who have come out and they've beaten some teams that are considered to be major programs and then lost to middle of the road to lower level mid-major teams. And you're like, well, how does that happen? And I think that two things happen from stuff like that. One, people think, well, that team may not actually be good. And two, people underestimate that team when it comes time because they're like, oh, well, what they did was a fluke. And that's what I talk about with big wins and big losses. It can skew how people think about who you are based off of the amount of or the point differential.
And I'd like
that to be dangerous.
Yeah, I'd like to take up this maybe in our first point, the next pod. But I like what Coach K said. You know, it's a big game because we are playing. You know, so every game's a big game because we're playing in it, and therefore, you know, we're playing to our own standard, and it doesn't matter, you know, whether we're playing, you know, the number 10 team in the country, or you know, someone that's outside of the rankings, et cetera, et cetera. I think it would be interesting question: are there more wild swings? Is what you're talking about? Does it happen more often today than in the past? It might. Are there more wild swings in the game? Is that all attributed to the three-point shot? Maybe. I don't think so either. I think there's a few things there we can probably discuss.
Absolutely. I think the three-point shot is responsible for more people losing games than it is for more people winning games. But we can talk about that later for sure. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. This has been Offensive Interference. I've been Coach Gene Clemens. That's Whit LaJure. Make sure that you like and subscribe to the podcast. You can find it on Spotify or wherever that you're looking for podcasts at, but definitely find it on Spotify. Rate the show, comment, agree, disagree. But definitely let us know what you think. And until next time, I've been Coach Clemens. That's Coach LaJure.
Have a great week.
Absolutely.